Doc pointed with a tremulous finger down the corridor. It was as he'd guessed. The passage was split into sections, each separated by retractable, armor-plated bulkheads. One of them was dropping from the ceiling like an executioner's axe, bisecting the corridor. Before any of them could move, it settled solidly in place on the floor.
Ah, bastard!
Ryan spun around to see precisely what he'd expected. 20 paces or so in front of them, another door was falling, inexorably sealing them in an exitless part of the complex. And it looked as if the bulkheads were made of some vanadium alloy that would resist their plastic explosives and grenades. JB looked quickly around the group.
Nobody use any bombs. The concussion could kill us.
There was a dreadful moment of tension. Everyone in the party except Christy and Doc had often put their lives on the line. On the war wags, ambushes and traps were part of everyday life. The best chance of escape was almost always in the first paralyzing breaths. Everyone knew that. Now, all of them moved and turned like caged animals, fingers white on triggers, eyes raking the walls and floor and ceiling for some hint of an escape route. But the only marks that sullied the smooth whiteness were the pockmarks where Oki had wasted the vid camera. It was a frenetic ballet of nerves. Ryan knew that everyone was riding the knife edge.
Easy, easy. Whoever it is, they've got us cold.
All dressed up to kill. But look who's going to die. Guns down, slow and easy. Hands up on heads. You have 10 seconds, then I let the gas in. It'll kill you in less than half a minute.
Ryan spotted another camera near the top of the bulkhead in front of them, and guessed the speaker was linked to it.
Quickly! Do it. Game's done. Ollie, ollie, oxen free! Ollie, ollie, oxen free!
Ryan put his guns on the stone floor and placed his hands on his head. The others followed suit. After the nuclear holocaust of 2001, Russia ceased to exist. The Soviet Union vanished overnight, and in 60 searing minutes, the purging flames of the brief war that truly ended all wars destroyed every single Russian city and industrial complex. Every armaments factory and missile base, every port and bridge was nuked. The destruction was total. In places, particularly the farthest recesses of the north and east, in the devastated Kamchatka Peninsula, in Siberia, and the parts of old Russia near North America, the nuclear winter lingered, just as in other regions of the globe, the leaden skies and bitter cold reigning for a generation. To survive in temperatures that rarely rose above 5 degrees required a brutal adaptation. The trees of the taiga were destroyed. Only a few stunted, mutated pines were left in millions of acres. Most of the wildlife had succumbed as an almost universal death spread across the north. What animal life survived mutated like the trees. And of the children of the people who survived, many of them were born mutated like the animals. The peasants in the Russian hamlet of Ozbarchik knew little of living. What they understood was how to barely exist. They understood how to maintain the breath in their scrawny bodies on a diet of dried fish and the occasional lucky find of the carcass of a small mammal that the wolves had abandoned. Beyond that, there was watery milk from the village's 4 rack-boned cows and an endless diet of potatoes, turnips, and other root vegetables. One of the peasants owned a few chickens, and once every few weeks, found a tiny egg among the rotting straw. In these tumble-down hovels, which were scattered along a shallow valley about 50 miles from the sea, there lived 37 men, 19 women, and 4 children. Only one of the villagers, a man, was older than 35. The grubbing lives of the people of Ozbarchik were brutish and short. One of the children of the village, a young boy, had the roomy-eyed, vacant stare and slobbering, sagging mouth of a congenital idiot. His right hand had no thumb, and on his left hand were crammed 11 shrunken residual digits. Beneath the torn cloth and stinking furs, he had 2 separate and distinct sets of genitalia. One set was male, the other wasn't. The group of men now surrounding him wasn't familiar. A few of them were large men and rode horses, but most of them were small and were astride squat, shaggy ponies. All of them wore layers of fur over their bodies and heavy fur hats halfway over their slanted eyes. Most had rifles slung across their shoulders. Behind them was a train of 12 pack horses carrying bigger guns and food. The boy smiled and nodded. Strangers were rare in Ozbarchik, Strangers meant happiness, he knew that. Sometimes there was music and dancing. He liked that, liked to caper with his ponderous steps, his head swinging low, his hands pawing the air like a muty polar bear. When he danced like that, his mother and father laughed. It was good. The man leading the party of riders was tall, close to 6 feet. His eyes were almond-shaped, with golden irises. His mouth was thick-lipped and kind. Around his forehead, he wore a band of beaten silver with a large ruby at its center. His name was Uchitil, and he was nicknamed the teacher because he was pretty much the only one in the band who was literate. But that wasn't what made him the leader.
You, boy!
The boy bowed as he'd been taught to greet strangers.
Yes, master?
This is Ozhbarchik?
Yes, master.
There is food here?
Yes, master.
It is good to see such politeness in one so young. Surely the fathers here teach their children well.
The lad grinned, shuffling his booted feet in the powdery snow.
They will welcome strangers and give us food and wine, will they not?
Give, master?
The boy was puzzled. They didn't give anything to anyone. They sold or traded or bartered. There was little enough for them.
Yes, boy. Give us all food? Do you not understand that?
Despite his idiocy, the lad knew when something was wrong. The smile disappeared from his face as he backed slowly away.
We do not give food, master. No food to give. Poor.
Uchitil turned in his saddle, nodding sagely to the group's incendiary expert, Pieka the baker. The baker of men.
This spark of sunlight says that his people are poor, Pieka.
It is sad to be poor, Uchitil.
It is truly sad to be poor.
Uchitil then glanced over at the retreating boy.
Are all poor in your village?
The stranger's face hadn't changed. There was no anger in the voice, no scowl to the wide mouth. The strange yellow eyes remained fathomless, inscrutable. But something was different. The young boy was